You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
And we are joined right now by the amazing Jonathan Ogilvie, director, producer and writer of NZIFF film Head South. How are you doing today, Jonathan?
I'm very well after a great opening night here in Christchurch. We opened on three screens. I'm kind of recovering from a big night.
Well, that's good to hear. So, you said the screenings, they all went well. Three different ones, you were jumping between doing different Q&As.
Yeah, that's right, introducing and doing Q&As in each one, and that went very well. People, it's always a good test for how many people stay around for the Q&A.
Yeah.
And basically, there wasn't anybody leaving, except maybe if they had weak bladders, maybe they left and came back.
Well, that's good to hear. Now, we'll head straight in. Tell us a little bit about this film. It's semi-autobiographical, set in Christchurch, 1979. Give us a little bit more.
Yeah, so Angus is a 17-year-old whose mother's gone away for a fortnight, and he's stuck with his world-weary father, Gordon, and he discovers the plethonic world of post-punk. In a time before post-punk went into pubs, and pubs were just playing bad covers. You could argue that maybe they still are, certain pubs. But before there was a circuit, or before pubs were actually playing the new music, he discovers it in warehouses. He gets very excited about it and wants to be part of it. And he's a fantasist, so he basically talks his way into being in a band when he's unable to play anything.
Gosh, sounds like a lot of people I know. So, as I said, it's semi-autobiographical. How much inspiration did you take from your own life?
Yeah, everything that happens in the film happened,
yep.
And most of it happened to me. So, yeah, it's pretty much all there, actually. Yep.
Yeah, and you have a history of directing music videos. You did the classic She Speeds by Straightjacket Fitz. How do you feel that, like, where was your draw towards music and capturing music on film?
Yeah, well, in fact, Shane Carter is the composer of the film. And I approached him, and yes, I first did that clip for She Speeds. And part of the look of the film is inspired by those early music videos shot on 16mm reversal film. So it looks like, the film looks like it's been shot on film. In fact, it's digital, but a lot of work.
Yeah,
takes a lot of work to make something look DIY. So we kept things like, there's edits within the frame that you see every once in a while.
Cool.
In She Speeds, if you pause it at certain, I think there's a close up on Shane where I couldn't get the splice out of the edit when I was doing it, and so it's in there forever. And so we added those in post to give that feel. We wanted to really get that DIY feel. And Shane, in terms of his music, he's first and foremost, you know, a great musician, of course, but his weapon of choice is the guitar. So from day one, I wanted a guitar-driven soundtrack. So he went out and he got the flanger, which was the pedal of choice in those days, and the flanger pedal, and then to his repertoire. And so the soundtrack's got a sparseness to it, but it all comes from guitar. Sometimes you'd swear it was a synthesizer or some sort of keyboard, but it's actually all triggered from Shane's guitar. So it's a very exciting soundtrack, I think.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what does post-punk music specifically of this era mean to you personally?
Yeah, well, I make a distinction between punk and post-punk, and the distinction I make is that in sort of the opposition of the argument, which used to be, oh, they couldn't play their instruments, Lou Reed famously said, you know, one chord good, two chords okay, three chords you're getting into jazz. So there's nothing wrong with a one chord song.
Yeah,
and they used to say punk rock was three chords and they couldn't play their instruments. Of course they could all play their instruments, and there was a lot of those bands, they were working musicians from, you know, playing in pubs and stuff, who suddenly just play a bit faster, and lo and behold, they've jumped on the punk bandwagon. Whereas post-punk to me was much more interesting, because actually, you actually did have people that could not play their instruments. Picking them up for the first time and actually doing something that's not necessarily blues, a blues riff or something that you learn when you learn guitar, actually picking at it and going, well, what happens if I do this? What happens if I do that? And to me, that was the big breakthrough, because it was suddenly music and public image features heavily in the film. Hearing that and hearing Jar Wobble's bass line and Keith Levin's guitar, you just went, oh, I could almost do that.
Yeah.
I can actually understand that. As opposed to the Sex Pistols, it's like, well, that's an incredibly well-recorded and well-played record. I couldn't hope to do a song as complex as a Sex Pistols song.
Yeah. And do you find there's something, a kind of healing aspect between making a coming-of-age film that is semi-autobiographical?
Yeah. Well, it's been an interesting thing for me, because I've been making films for 30-odd years and assiduously avoiding the advice that everybody is given to write about what you know.
Yeah.
And I really haven't done – the truth is you always write about what you know and you adapt it into other stories. But this is the first time I've actually mined my own experiences. And I think it needed that breathing space of those years. One of the interesting things for me, and I think a lot of people agree, that the relationship between Ed Oxenbould, the character Angus, and his dad, played by Martin Chokash Gordon, is a key relationship. And if I'd written it any earlier, I probably would have been always on the side of Angus, the 17-year-old, but I'm now writing it at a point where I'm actually older than the dad. So that has that brings an interesting dynamic between the two of them. It almost becomes like a debating topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should Angus go to the gig, be allowed to go to the gig? Pro, cons, you know?
Yeah.
Discuss.
Yeah, you're bringing a different experience level to it now. Looking
exactly.
Back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the process behind the film and getting it into production, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's an NZFC funded production. We went in there, as you do. Ed Oxenbould was attached as Angus early on, and then I approached Stella Bennett, Benny, and she loved the script and was I've just seen her videos, and I thought, yeah, this is someone who's ready to do some acting.
Yeah,
and she's fantastic in the role. I really like casting musicians. I cast Marlon Williams in my last film, Lone Wolf.
Yeah,
and musicians can bring a really interesting energy to a role. They may not have the range of a trained actor, of course, but if they're in the right role, I think they bring a really interesting, kind of unique energy. That's their performers, of course, and it not so actorly as some actors can go down that road of being too actorly. So there's a freshness, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, rawness and authenticity.
And a naturalness, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic in the role. And then the rest of it was Jane Marnie, casting director, just offering me up this terrific cast. I mean, there's so much talent in Aotearoa.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly amazed. You know, all the performances are fantastic.
That's lovely to hear. And one last question before you leave, about the costuming. I'm really interested in this because obviously it's curating a time period. For you, was that interesting? How much were you involved in that process? And was it interesting to see it all come together and realize that era once again?
Yeah, it was very much. And that was an interesting thing. I think a lot of films get this wrong when they do this kind of era. The Americans are absolutely hopeless at doing anything that has to do with punk, because they have a bunch of punkers with purple, you know, mohawks,
yeah,
and safety pins and zips, and they are always over the top and look ridiculous. So what 79 is, at least in Christchurch, was this merging of the shifting of the guard into a sort of, even just having having what we call stovepipes that we never did now, but straight leg trousers was you could get yourself beaten up for just wearing those down the street. So there was that change of the guard, which was interesting. So not everybody was. So it was important in the scenes, in the gigs or shows, as you'll find out. You're not allowed to call them gigs. It makes you sound like an old geezer, though. In the shows, you could see that there's a mixture of people who look like they might be from the Grateful Dead, so it's hangers-on of the hippie time,
yeah.
Plus this new look. And one of the iconic looks for Roxy Mohibi plays the role of Holly, and she was absolutely based on the Debbie Harry look.
Oh, yes, of course.
And so going into the wardrobe, I'd see lots of pictures of Deborah Harry everywhere. So that was delightful because we went to Rotterdam. We opened the Rotterdam Film Festival earlier in the year. And lo and behold, who was a guest at the festival as well? Debbie Harry.
So oh, my God.
Who's been one of my idols, one of my heroes for many years.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. And she's an example. What I also love about this post-punk is that it actually brought forward, was diverse enough to encourage all these young, well, at the time young, but all these powerful women to come through. You have Patti Smith, you have Deborah Harry. A bit later on, you have PJ Harvey, you have Kim Gordon. All these women playing a role, I think, really important. And actually, I said that to Deborah Harry. I said, I told her that she was the influence on it and how it was great that these powerful women all came through. And she said, I'm not powerful, but I suspect she is.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jonathan. It sounds like it's the perfect film for anyone who enjoys Radio 1. Any young musician in Dunedin must go see it. I can't think of a film that's showing in this program that would be better for them. Thank you so much for coming on air. The film is showing on the 21st and the 23rd of August at the Regent. As Angus said, you can get your tickets through the NZIFF website. And, of course, there is the five-pass deal for students, $70. It's a little bit cheaper. You can get five passes. Hit that up. And later in the show, we will be giving away a double pass so you yourself can go see this amazing film. Jonathan, we hope you have a lovely rest of your day.
Thank you, Lily. Thank you, Angus.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.